No, that's better than...
That's a bit of Cambridge?
Yeah, that's a little change to public these times. Again, but that's a research area that focuses on the public.
Okay, I'm confused.
No, that's okay.
So you want to sort of involve that committee or just experiment?
I don't actually have this slide. Or anything to sample, though, I guess. If I had been more prepared, I might have set up a little demo. But I don't know how quickly we want to focus this conversation. So there was a feature called deltas that we sort of talked about at Mix last year, that we have a prototype for, that we've done some playing around with and some fairly deep thinking on. So I can describe what that is and get input on that. Or if we want to start out just talking more generally about change tracking and some of the requirements and some of the scenarios before we drive into a particular proposed solution, we can do that. So what would people like to see?
Is everybody familiar with what the Delta work you've done before was? Because I'm not familiar with it, so I'd love to hear about it unless it's redundant for everyone.
Can you give examples?
Sure. So the basic idea of deltas was fairly simple and straightforward. And that was that when a server generated a response, it could include with that response a link that the client could later use in order to fetch just the changes to that feed since the initial data was requested. So it follows the hypermedia principles of being very server-driven. Basically, in the same way, a response may have a next page link, it could have a delta link. And so there's a specific rel value registered for deltas. And any response that contained that delta link, the client could hold on to that link, and at a later time, could use that to fetch just changes to the data since the data was originally requested. That was it at a very high level. Now, there's a lot of details about how it interacts with server-driven paging, how it interacts with filtering, how it interacts with relationships, and so forth, that we can go into. But the basic high-level idea is the service could just give you a link that you can use at a later time to fetch changes. Now, that very simple idea proved to be very powerful for a lot of different scenarios. Given that link, at any later time, you could get just those changes that had occurred. And even if you had seen changes since that initial point, it never hurt to reapply those changes because you were getting all of the changes from your initial data up to the current data. The server didn't actually have to keep track of changes. Typically, the implementations that we had in mind, we tried not to be too implementation driven, but it was a design requirement that the server needed not to have to keep per client state. We wanted to make sure that this scaled, and by letting the server generate a URL, we envisioned in most scenarios that URL basically containing a watermark. And so at any later time, the server didn't have to keep any per client state. All it had to remember is the timestamps each change was made, and most databases, for instance, have that capability. And as long as you know when changes were made, at any time, anyone can give you back what you have encoded in a URL, which is the request and the timestamp of the last change as of when you served that request. And it's a fairly straightforward process just to generate any records that have changed since that point. It gets a little bit more complicated once you get into deletions. For deletions, you kind of need a side table for a tombstone table so that if something's been deleted since you originally fetched it, you still have some place to get at least the ID. You don't have to keep the whole thing. You have to keep just the ID in order to return that back and so that the client can remove that from their local collection. If you start supporting things like deltas on filters, that starts getting a little bit more complicated because if something is not in your initial set and later gets changed so it's now in your set, then that timestamping, that high watermark will find it. because it's now in the set of things that you asked for. If it was in the set and it gets changed and is still in the set, then again, your high watermark mechanism will find it. However, if something used to be in your set and a change was made to it such that it's no longer in your set, querying just for things that have changed since a particular time that meet your original filter condition, it won't naturally appear. You would need some type of data change capture or other mechanism, logging mechanism or something else, to know the changes that had occurred, so you could do a query that found out if, at the time that the initial response was generated, something existed in the set that no longer exists in that set. So that's where we started talking about, once you got more complicated queries that you were trying to do change tracking on, the more mechanisms were involved in the server to try to figure out just those changes.
Now, is the length that you get back, that's for query?
Yeah, so the idea was that the length that came back would come back in your results, and it would be an opaque thing that the server generated. And when you re-executed it, it would return you just changes that occurred since you read your initial data.
Right, so changes to the objects that were referenced in that query?
Right, changes to your overall result.
So you also get when you just get the data, so to say, for query requests to the server, that public.
Right.
And then you get a set of new entries back, but in addition, also with another.
You get a new delta link, exactly. When you use a delta link to get your changes, you get the changes in a new delta link that you could use to get changes the next time you needed changes. There's an interesting relationship with server-driven paging. Server-driven paging is a feature that allows a server to return results in fixed or even variable set sizes and multiple responses. And so with server-driven paging, you make a request, you get back a partial result and a next page link. And that next page link you send back to the server to get the next set of results, the next set of results, until you get the full set of results. With the deltas, what we said was that you wouldn't get the delta link until you had retrieved that last result, just to be sure that you weren't trying to apply changes to an incomplete result. We also said it was possible to do paging over your delta request. So if I got 10,000 records initially, and then didn't go back for another month and use my delta query to get changes since a month, I might have more changes than fit in one page. So again, your delta request could have multiple next page links up until the final page of changes would then have the delta link that you could use to get the next set. And you would know when you were current by the fact that you got a new delta link. There's also an interesting side effect with paging, which is, since in most cases the server is not keeping state from your first request through your next page request until the next link, if you're allowing changes to occur on your server while the user is fetching the multiple pages, it's possible that the results that they get are inconsistent. And deltas are actually a way to get to a consistent state. Because if at the end of your multiple pages, you get a delta link and you immediately request changes, you will, by definition, by following all of the changes from that delta link, the multiple pages of that delta link, get to a point where your local state represented maybe not the current state of the database, because something may have changed, there may be a race condition from when you got the result that contained the next delta link. But at least it was a consistent state at the point at which your delta link was generated. So it had a lot of these nice little.
I guess unless that page too.
Pardon?
I said, I guess unless that page too, and then you're in that same scenario.
Well, the other thing we said is that the results returned in your deltas were ordered by when the change occurred. So if you were applying changes in the order that you got that they occurred, and you got to the point where the server didn't know about any more changes, then you are by definition in a valid state of the server. Now, the very next instant, there may be another change, but that's not an inconsistency, that's a latency. So what does the system do? Well, we talked about a few things. Is that distracting? We can turn that off if we're not using it. Theoretically, we can turn that off. And as I say, we did have a sample service set up, and I think I closed it down just so I didn't continue getting charged for that Windows Azure service, but I still have it, I believe, and I can put it up and we can demo it. In fact, I can leave it up for a while if you guys want to play with it a little bit, just to see how the paging works through it. I actually put up an example. That one may still be up. I put an example of a Netflix feed that had deltas enabled, so that you could go and get the Netflix data, and rather than once a night when they change one or two titles, having to fetch the whole thing down again, you would actually, using the Delta link, just get those two titles that are no longer available for instant view, or those three that have been added for instant view, or those two that they changed the rating for. So it's kind of something fun to play around with. So what does this do? Number one, it solves the consistency thing. Number two is it gives me a server-driven, hypermedia-driven, scalable way that I can get just changes that occur to my data. What doesn't it do? It doesn't give me full multi-master synchronization of data, right? It assumes that there is one true source of the data, which is the service that you're fetching data from. And that's where you go to find out the latest information. I can make changes to my local data, just as I do today with OData, and I can submit those changes back to the service, just as I do today with OData. But I'm not synchronizing those, I am making an optimistic request from the client to change data on the server, and then I'll get deltas to tell me, okay, those changes have occurred. Now that's actually kind of interesting because in some ways it's a more flexible model for how you make changes to data in the service. So in many cases, if I'm making changes to the data in the service, it's not through direct actions, like I'm not going to directly insert a new record or modify an existing record, but I may execute an action. And that action may, as a side effect, that action may be place an order. And that action of placing the order might be to update the status of the order to place, might be to create a new shipping thing, might be to deprecate the number of available items of, that, of those particular types by one or however many I put in my shopping cart. So there may be a variety of different things that happen on the server, state changes on the server, that I may not even understand on my client. So the fact that rather than trying to change state on my client, I'm executing an action and then requesting from the service what has changed as a result of my action actually models some types of service interactions, not all, but some types of server interactions in a much better way, a more fidelity way. We even talked about the possibility of combining actions and deltas a little bit, and that what you got back from the action was a delta link that you could use to find out what had changed as a result of the action that you just performed. But it's not multi-master. So I can use it in distributed client scenarios. How well it suits itself to a truly offline scenario kind of depends on the chance of conflicts, on how partitioned the data is and how long I'm offline. So if I go offline for a long period of time and I work on my email, and then I go back online and submit my changes and get my deltas, that's going to work pretty well. This is my mail, and I've made changes to it, and actually most of the changes that I've made, I've either deleted things or I've created new things. I haven't changed much. If I'm in the field creating new sales orders and pushing those up, that's going to work well because I'm creating new data. That new data is not conflicting with other people. If I have some type of shared data and multiple different people are editing, making changes to that shared data simultaneously, such that when I go to sync my changes back, there's a high likelihood of conflict, then it's not going to work very well as a distributed, synchronized, offline scenario. Does that make sense?
So have you thought about checking check out anything? Opening all possibilities.
That's actually very interesting. Having a check in, check out capability sort of bridges the gap that says this data may normally be somewhat distributed, not naturally partitioned, but for this point in time, I'm partitioning it.
Right.
I'm saying this is my data, so you know you can read it, but you can't make changes on it.
Right.
Yeah, actually, I think that's a great addition to
Yeah, if you implement it down that way, distribute it and share the resource kind of environment, but that almost like that last half kind of feature.
So just to contrast a little bit, a full synchronization, are people, who's familiar with the Microsoft Sync framework? Okay. A full synchronization system, like the Microsoft Sync framework, allows basically peer-to-peer replication so that any node can synchronize with any other node. It's a true multi-master peer-to-peer system. So that I might go to the service and I might get the data and then I might see you and I can give you the stuff that I know from the service. And you can give me stuff that you know from the service. And then I can talk to you and I can give you stuff that I got from him. And so it's true peer-to-peer, which is a great sharing model. And there are some scenarios where that's exactly what you want. The cost of doing that is much higher because now I've gotten data from all these different locations. We have created state that the server knows nothing about. And you guys have, meanwhile, been talking amongst yourself, creating this state that the server knows nothing about. And now when we go talk to the server and you talk to the server, there are likely going to be conflicts. And so the framework like the Microsoft Sync framework has conflicts built into its natural working model, where each of us has to understand the full topology of devices. So it has to know everybody else and who, what data everybody else has changed. And part of what we synchronize is not just the data, but our knowledge of the network. And then the data itself carries exceptions. So at any point, I can query and find out what do you think the value for this particular data value is versus your value and your value and your value. And it's a very, very powerful system, but it adds a lot of complexity. And so one of the things that we're talking about the other day is trying to draw the line between having something very simple in OData that addresses targeted scenarios that are valuable and building something that fleshes out the set of scenarios that you may potentially support, but at the cost of greater complexity. When we looked at doing full sync framework, the cost on the protocol, on the clients, on the servers, and on everyone else was significantly higher. You now on your server have to start storing this, what in the sync framework they call knowledge, and transporting that knowledge and doing comparisons of knowledge in order to do synchronizations peer-to-peer. So with that kind of background, are deltas interesting? Is there enough functionality there to meet scenarios that you guys would have? Is it the right, we can talk about some of the other detailed trade-offs, but first of all, is there even an interest? Would you guys use this and where would you guys use this? You're nodding, so.
Yeah, it's something very interesting to us. We've got customers asking us to leverage that functionality as opposed to that through our drivers. For the relational data sources we have, starting working with cloud data sources, and the OneCloud's pixels that we do support today, we do have a mechanism to query the changes and all and get the changes back. That's very important, mainly just to reduce communication back and forth between the server right now. But yeah, customers are we're starting to get queries from a number of different customers as far as asking this change track. And there's two different scenarios that we see them asking it for. One is for auditing, and in that case, they want to see every single specific change. So if something changed three times since I queried it the last, they want to see all three of those changes, you know, when it's going to change. The other is more of a caching scenario where I don't really care how many times you change, I just want to see the last value. Having the capability of doing either of those scenarios.
Yeah, so I think it's great to point out those two different scenarios. The delta change tracking is a net sum change, typically. So you wouldn't see those interim changes. You could, right? You could use the same mechanism, and we could define that the server returns those intermediate changes. That would put the burden on the server to keep track of all that information. The client logic, it turns out, would work the same, as long as they're applying them in order, would work the same whether they return all of the changes or just the net sum changes.
That you get information, like if something was inserted or something was deleted, that's pretty straightforward. If something's updated, do you get information about what it was and what changed?
So that's one of the interesting questions. In the simplest case, you would just get the current value of that record. Now, what we did say is that, in general, over-notification was not desirable, but was okay. It never broke the client. So you could return more records than it actually changed, and the client would redundantly just apply the new values. We also said the server was only required to return those properties that changed. So a server that knew only these two properties of this record changed could return just those two properties. And when the client used the knowledge to merge that into their view of the data, they would have the correct data. Excuse me. But we also said that the client should not assume, just because a property came back in the payload, that it had changed. And in many cases, it's much for the store to track that there was a change to this row than what particularly changed. So we wanted to keep things simple, and we also wanted to provide the opportunity for more capable stores to do optimizations, like returning a fewer number of rows and a fewer number of properties when they were able to track what had actually changed. With annotations now, annotations didn't exist when we were first contemplating deltas, we can provide a lot more information about what had changed for cases where the server knows. Your first case where you're trying to do auditing is in O data probably better served by actually including the time changed and then providing either through that entity set or a parallel entity set the historical table. It turns out that for certain type of queries, in order to support deltas well over certain type of queries, you actually in the store need that full historical data. And I alluded to a couple of those before, but primarily the case where you want to know when something that you initially retrieved is no longer in the set of things, you need to know the initial value and the current value, or at least not the initial value, but the value at the time the delta was created versus the current value. And we actually did some prototyping and using SQL Server change data capture. I don't know if you guys are familiar with change data capture, but it basically tells you about the different times when the records change and provides you all of the data before and after each change occurred. If you have that, then you can do change tracking on arbitrary queries. So the other thing that we kind of said in the delta feature is that if the server can't support change tracking on a particular request, it would signify so by not returning a delta link. And so it was kind of up to the server how sophisticated of queries they wanted to support deltas for. One of the nice things we liked about this design of the delta link and including the delta in the response is it composed very well with what exists in OData today. So we initially started thinking about, you know, okay, I've got my service document today and it exposes the sets that are available to query. Now, do I augment that with, you know, the request that I need to make in order to get deltas? And when we, and for a while, we went down a path that basically said there was a difference between making a request for data and a request for deltas. And when we're able to say, really, any request can return in its result a delta link, it collapsed things very nicely because, of course, clients that don't care about the delta link can safely ignore that. But clients that want to do this local diffing now have a mechanism to know exactly those cases in which they can get that additional information.
Yeah. I just thought of something. Would it make sense to also consider, at least, to make the data service view notification rather than client pulling the updates?
So that's actually a great question. And we talked a lot about push versus pull models.
Right.
And kind of what we came to was, if we implemented a pull model where the client returned a delta and then the server returned a delta that they created, and then the client was able to pull on that, it was easy to build a push model around that.
Mm.
Because now the client could, for instance, turn around and, if the server supported notifications, could post that delta essentially to a notification queue and say, tell me when this thing changes. And then we already have the encoding of what that data is. It's just a matter of now the server's keeping track of that delta and who it needs to notify
right.
when that delta
executes.
So we did envision the push scenario as well as a pull scenario.
Yeah.
But we felt like it could build on top of the pull.
So I can think of a perfect scenario to use pull. So one of the hypothetic use cases that we built a virtual observatory of CO2s, which actually aggregates data from very heterogeneous data sources. Some sources don't change very often. For example, maybe the city decided 2 years later to turn a huge farmland into a heavy industry factory. That changes the CO2 kind of thing magically in the city. Then the traffic control could give me almost every minute kind of update about how the CO2 is, you know, due to the cars on the street. So I can, if I want to consume the CO2 data from this virtual observatory, perhaps I will just pull constantly the changes due to the traffic. But then I want to be notified whenever there's a large kind of factory replace a farmland or agriculture kind of change. So I can use both features easily and then very productively.
It's also, if the push notifications work well if you're connected,
mm-hmm.
but they don't work very well if you're not available
no,
when the
right.
server decides to try to push to you.
Sure.
So one of the nice things about the deltas too is I could go offline as long as I wanted and come back at a later time and use my delta. And as long as the server remembered that watermark,
mm-hmm.
It could respond to me. Now, the other thing we talked about was there has to be some mechanism for the server eventually to forget about history, particularly once you start about talking about tombstones and change the data capture and so forth. There could theoretically be a point at which somebody comes up and says, I need to know all changes from 6 years ago. And they keep 3 years of history.
Yeah, the histogram of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in that case, we basically said that it was legal for the Delta to return a response that basically said, I can't service this, you need to resubmit your
right.
initial query. And it's very possible, and in our prototypes, in fact, practical, that the initial request is encoded as part of the Delta link.
Mm.
And so it would be even possible for the server to return, here's the query that you need to request the full set of data at this point.
Have you thought about how these concepts might be applied to schema changes, the data change?
We did do a little bit of thinking about how it applied to schema change and the fact that there's some type of schema changes which would not invalidate a delta, and other types of schema changes which definitely would. And certainly schema change also can then fall into this category of, I can no longer service the delta link that I was initially presented. We contemplated a lot of different levels of schema changes and things that where I could say, you know, well, here are your changes, but they may or may not match the data that you expect them to because of schema changes and describing schema changes and so forth. And we decided to leave the door open for those, but in the initial version we wouldn't describe schema changes in detail, other than to have a way to say this delta URL is no longer valid due to a schema change.
So are your deltas stored on a per table, per query, like per row? How does it work?
So again, we tried not to mandate a particular implementation, but we did think about how we would implement deltas to make sure that they're implementable. And in the systems that we considered, the server really had to keep no per-client state. It was again, a design requirement that the server not be required to keep per-client state in order to support deltas. So in something like a relational database, which is what we initially prototyped this over, the requirement was for simple change tracking on sets, if you didn't talk about filters for a moment, that the server needed to have timestamps on every row and needed to have a tombstone table in order to track deletions, where the tombstone table contained either needed one per table in the database, or you needed one that encoded the table name as well as the keys and the time that it was deleted. And with that state on the server, you could do change tracking over sets, over unfiltered sets. You could also, so I talked a little bit about the problem of having to keep change information if you allow records to change that might move them in and out of a particular request. There is a interim level, which is to say, as long as the filter is on an immutable column, then you don't have to keep the interim change history, because you know it won't have moved in or out of your collection based on changes to the row, only additions and deletions. And the degenerative case of that, of course, is if your filter is only on key properties. So if particularly in a federated system where I might have, you know, a federation key that partitions my data by zip code or by whatever else, I can query for all information by zip code, and now I can safely change track that only by keeping the tombstone table and the timestamps. So there was this interim thing that said, you know, as long as you know that the query is filtered on a property that's not going to change, I don't need to keep historical information. But it was very definitely the design that you could do something where you kept state information about the system, but the server kept zero client state until you got to a push notification scenario. And of course, with the push notification scenario, you would need to keep track of the location that you were pushing to, a description of the set of data that you're pushing to that, and then possibly separately something that helped you figure out whether or not that was a notification that you wanted to push.
Just from our point of view, we definitely need the per query. Then we need to see if our data set changes, we need that row to be removed from our data set, even if that row hasn't been removed from the server. And we did solve that problem in another product. But if you use change tracking, I think part of it, though, the server knew what the clients wanted, but we didn't use an operation ID, so we essentially kept a transaction log that we built ourselves of the changes in the system. An OData approach to moving data, like we're looking at OData from the point of view of moving data from the server to the client and back and forth. We need a way to handle that problem of I'm not sure it makes sense to put that right into the standard. It might be we need to build it on top of the standard, but it is a problem we need to solve.
So this is a scenario where you have fetched data initially from the server. One of the rows that you got from the server, you marked as deleted, and you've tried to push that deletion back to the server and it's failed, or just you have not yet pushed it to the server, but you want it to see locally deleted between the time that you delete it and the time you push that.
No, that's not what I meant when I said deleted. I meant deleted from, it's, say you partition your data, okay? So you're a salesperson, you have a bunch of customers, and you need to know about your customers. And then something in your company changes, and all of a sudden you have new customers and someone else is losing customers. That change, the person that gets the new customers needs the new customer, but that isn't a new entry in the server. And then the person who's losing a customer, they need that customer to be deleted from their device. But that's not a delete, it's in the server.
I see.
That's what I mean by deleting from the client, but not the server.
Yeah.
We need to be able to solve that problem.
Yeah. So that was a scenario we anticipated with deltas. We asked ourselves a little bit, does the client care that a record that it saw before, that was part of the set that it saw before, is no longer part of the set because it was hard deleted versus because it was changed and no longer part of that set? Or is all they care about that they should remove that from the set? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I don't know if I can say in general that they don't care, but I would say that in a lot of cases, if the client only cares about the data they have on their device and not the data that's in the rest of the system, then whether it's deleted on just their device or deleted in the server or what caused the delete, I don't think it matters to them. But that's my opinion, thinking about it for 10 seconds, not necessarily that everyone is concerned about the problem.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. In the Delta specification, the way we proposed handling that, because we thought in most cases the client wouldn't care, and the only case we could think of where they would care is if there were perhaps cascading actions. The fact that this customer was no longer existing meant I was going to go delete a bunch of orders that shouldn't really have been deleted. Hard deleted, because. So what we did is we represented deletions with a tombstone. And in the atom format, we followed the atom tombstone specification, which is basically just a record with a URL of the thing, URI, of the thing that it has deleted. And we added to that a deletion reason. And the deletion reason was deleted or changed or unknown. So that the server could actually tell the client, this is deleted because of a change. It's no longer something that fits the category that you initially requested, but it's still valid or potentially valid. This is something that is deleted because there was a hard delete on the server. This thing no longer exists as far as I'm concerned.
So it could be any reason.
Right.
It was a permission related.
Yep, it could be permission related. You used to be able to see this person and now you cannot see this person. And now that gets to the question, do you want to tell them that it's permission related, or is that itself a violation of security? And all you can really tell them is, as far as you know, it's no longer there. And, you know. One of the things we struggled with, though, is what about cases where the server might not know whether the thing no longer fit the initial criteria or was hard deleted? And in fact, there were some scenarios where it was expensive. It was easy for the server to find out this record no longer exists, given the filter that they specified, but much costlier for the server to figure out it still exists, it's just changed. And did we want to impose that cost on the server to return that information, or did we want the server to be able to say, as far as you're concerned, this is no longer in your set, but don't make any other assumptions about whether it still exists or not in the world. And so that was one of the areas where we were, again, trying to do a trade-off between how much information do we provide at what cost of both complexity and assuming certain reasonable implementations, cost of actual computing that information. So it's interesting, you know, to hear you say, in most scenarios, really what I care about is just removing it from the set on the client, because that was kind of what we came to.
Yeah, I think that's far as I know, that's how we solve that problem.
And basically, then the direction we would give is, unless you're told it was a hard delete, you have to assume it may still exist, but is just no longer relevant to the request you initially made.
So now this, when you get a delta link, are you getting actual entities back, or? I'm sorry, I'm just thinking that things. One way we kind of did is we use operations instead, whereas when you do a download, let's say, you're getting like full entities, but then when you want to do change tracking, you don't care about the full entities, you only care about what's changed. So you said that you only return the property of the chain. So what if, like, how do you tell the, I guess, how do you tell the client that it's an update, or how do you tell the client it's an insert, or how do you tell them that you need to delete this one? Is that
So again, the delta was a net change. So basically what we mandated, what we guaranteed, is that in your result, for any record that you had initially retrieved that had since changed, you would at least see the fields of that record that had changed. You might see more fields that had changed, but you would at least see the records that had changed. So you could always take what you got and merge it with what you currently have, and you would get the record that existed in the server.
How do I see what has been deleted?
That's the second part. Yeah. So for deletions, what you got back was a tombstone record. And so, as I said, in either Adam or Jason, basically a tombstone record was a record that was clearly marked as a tombstone. So we used the Adam deleted entry in Adam, and then a special underscore deleted or something like that in JSON. And then new JSON light, it would be a namespaced attribute that said deleted record. And that deleted record contains the guaranteed globally unique ID for the record, which is returned in the formats. And could optionally include the reason it was deleted and the time that it was deleted, in case you care. We weren't sure you ever really cared about when it was deleted, but the server always had that information, and the Adam deleted entries required that information. So
that's
it. Did you ever treat things like I want to say stored procedures and stuff as data, or did you consider data to be strictly the objects,
so I think that's related to Doug's question. Do we do change tracking on schema?
I'm just going to sit back down. More than schema, though.
Or do you mean if I invoke a stored procedure or a function and get back data,
yes,
and I get a delta? So we actually did anticipate that for functions. Functions are non-side effecting.
Yeah.
So it's safe to return a delta that encodes the function that you can later execute that and see what's changed. Particularly if you can compose onto the function the high watermark you encoded. Actions, if the server had the capability of returning a delta for results returned from the action, that it could satisfy without reinvoking the action, then it would be valid for it to return a delta link. So for instance, my action may be give everybody a 10% raise. Now, the result of that action is going to be a change to each and every record. And I can encode that timestamp as part of my high watermark, and later if you ask me have there been any changes since the results that I got as a result of this action, I can safely return you that information without reinvoking the action. But what I can't do is encode in that URL, invocation of the action, such that when somebody asks, has any of this changed, I give everybody a 10% raise again, and then return everybody as they've all now changed. That might be a nice thing to implement from the employee perspective, but after a while, the company might have problems with that.
What I was wrestling with was in GIS situations, there would be occasions, there's a software product company called FME, okay, in which you do a lot of translations from transformations of data. So one of the things retained is the nature of the projection on the planet. So we've been talking about lat long, which is topography, really. Okay, but there's also things like depth, and there's also things like where you are in the curvature of the Earth. It becomes important when you want to know, say, on a mobile phone, near to. Okay, it's not a straight line, which is what you think you get with a straight line in a Mercator projection, which is Google, is really long and up in the northern hemisphere where we are, like up where we are. So the thought was the data's changed. How do I, if I have a function that goes against that, how do I know that the function changed also? Because there'll be people that want, say, Google, and there'll be people that want Esri, and there'll be people that want different forms of projections, right?
Yeah, and again, as far as the protocol is concerned, the protocol can support that. Certain implementations, depending on the complexity of the function and how it's storing its data and what data it's storing, may or may not be able to generate a delta for that. And the protocol allows for that by saying, if you can compute a delta, then return a delta link. If you can't compute a delta, then don't return a delta link. And the server and the client can't assume that they can later get changes just to that particular set of data. So, and in fact, it may change on a case-by-case basis, on a function-by-function basis. Some functions you may be able to track changes on, some you may not. Now, you also might not be able to easily backwards compute the function to decide, has it really changed or not? But you might have cases where you know it's likely to have changed, and that's enough. If you know, if you can guarantee that you know when it has changed, but it may not have changed, you can over-notify again. You can say, you know what, the data on which this function was calculated has changed. I don't know if that actually resulted in a change for you or not, but I'm going to push you a delta because it may have changed. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. Because one of the hidden problems with open data is that there will be people that change your data, and you want to know that that occurred, right? So that when they use your data, say against you, or use it in uninterpreted manners, you want to know that that occurred. And one of the things we've been doing is looking at hashing on lat long. And if the hash goes to the same position, we're assuming the data's the same. I can't not say that tuple, actually. Mm-hmm. If you, as long as I can know that I have a function, delta equivalent, I can get a very interesting stuff. So when do we happen?
I just have some thoughts on the issue. So, I think for the protocol, it looks like a very nice feature, but I'm a bit concerned with the extra work for creating producers, basically, because this can be very complex in the producer, and it affects the whole of that ecosystem, I think. If you want to make it so hard to create a producer that limits who will do it, then that's not a good thing. I think I don't think the benefit of Delta is that big, but it's necessarily a good thing to complicate how much the work of the creating a new producer. So I think that should be carefully evaluated before taking a decision, because this is
don't know if we should implement this in our system.
So it's very definitely true that deltas are more or less complex depending on the back end that you're going against and the capabilities of the back end. And also depending on how sophisticated you want to get the change tracking. Change tracking in the presence of filters, change tracking in the case of relationships. So one thing we didn't really talk about is if I select customers and I expand orders, now do I expect, and I get a delta response from the server, do I expect that I get a change record when I use that delta if one of the orders has changed, or is that just additional payload that I got, and really I'm caring about deltas just on the customers that I got back?
That's exactly the situation I was thinking about.
And we have to think carefully about that. And from a client perspective, you might initially say, yes, I expect that if I do customers and orders, if I expand orders, that that's part of what I'm change tracking on. But it's very possible that in the client scenario where I have customers and orders, I'm really going to have two different sets. And I'm going to be managing relationships between those sets separately. And I'm going to be syncing those two sets separately. So there's not a lot of value in tracking that joined information. You can tell the client, you know, in those scenarios, separately query customers and query orders, create the relationships on the client, because that way when you're working offline, you can move those relationships back and forth, and then you can separately track changes on each of those. It means that you also have to be able to track changes on relationships to know when the server has changed what was related to what. So that's going down a whole other direction.
But then maybe then you need the connection which gives you all the links between two entities, which currently you don't have.
So we actually, correct, we don't quite have that. We do have, we have the ability to find out all the links from one entity to all the things that it's related to, and from all the things it's related to.
If you're only interested which employee has changed the manager, for example?
Interestingly, Entity Framework does have the capability to query relationships. Entity Framework associates not just entity sets, but association sets. And you can directly query an association set and say, give me all the relationships between customers and orders. And you get the customers and orders relationships. And now if you change track on that set, you get exactly what you're looking for in order to find out what things have changed on the client. So I totally agree with you that depending on how we define the feature and depending on how what expectations we set on the client as to how much of a feature server implements, it can get very, very complex. When we designed this, it was always with the idea that the server, it's up to the server to decide what level of Delta support they want to support. So it's very possible that the only thing I change track is a simple query against an entity set that returns all the values. That's pretty straightforward to do. The next level would be a filtered result on immutable columns. And that's actually just as easy as the first case. It's just that you have to be able to detect that case. And then the next case was any filter, and then you have to keep historical information, historical data that you can query against. And then we were, one of the reasons we didn't actually ship Delta's noted in V3 is we're uncertain on the last one. What are the expectations when you do an expand? Should the server just not return a Delta link in that case if you couldn't support it? Should it have some other representation or what should it do in change track? But in all cases, regardless of what we specified, it's always up to the server to decide when it returns a Delta because it's something that they can change track on and when it doesn't. So it was sort of a easy thing to opt into that had very that was very simple to describe in the protocol because it's just a new link that you get in the results that the server can decide where it wants to use it, where it doesn't want to use it.
See the problem is related to the business logic, isn't it? Because you could actually have customers, orders, and inventory on the order. Right? So now you got a backorder situation. Right? So how do you now go back and roll? It's the business logic of how that's built that's creating the issue, right? Or the complexity. And it's not a simple complexity. I mean, you have to decide at what level you'll stop. It's one thing if it's a single table, it's another if...
Yeah, well, we clearly said that if it wasn't, if you didn't expand the results, you didn't explicitly ask for the related results, that you didn't care about those changes. So the question was really, if I had customers and I expanded their orders in my response. And then we talked about, if a change to an order, something I explicitly requested, is something that is tracked by virtue of me returning a delta on that relationship, how do I represent the fact that an order has changed in that relationship? You know, I have a customer order, and we were relieved to recall that we had defined that you only need to return those properties that have changed. So you can return a customer order that didn't include any of the properties for that customer, and we said that you could return just the order of that customer that had changed. You didn't have to return all the orders. And if an order was no longer a member of the customer, you would return a tombstone in that customer's orders.
So I'm going to interrupt right now to let you guys know that you powered through a 10-minute break. the next session here is starting, but there are snacks that are available and ready for you.